clients, pitchers, bowls, and more. The market is open Saturdays on and along 2nd Avenue and Plaza Duay from 9 until 2. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning and welcome to WGTD and this, our Saturday morning program, Community Matters. I'm Linda Fleshinsky, the host for this week's edition of Community Matters. A recent cover of the Shepherd Express heralded this headline: Milwaukee responds to the rising tide of hatred. Jewish and Muslim groups continue their work despite threats. Anti-Semitic and anti-Muslim threats, graveyard desecrations, bullying are suddenly on the rise in the United States. The Shepherd Express article quotes Elena Kahn, the director of the Jewish Community Relations Council in Milwaukee, as saying, "To be an other," with other in quotes, "to be an other can be really challenging." She said this after a series of bomb threats that forced the evacuation of the Sampson Family Jewish Community Center during the past month. While there's nothing new about vandalism and threats against Jews, Muslims, Sikhs, and other minority faiths, there's been a spike in incidents including the burning of Muslim mosques, the desecration of Jewish graves, bomb threats to more than 80 Jewish centers, the murder of American Indians, harassment of Muslim and Jewish youth in schools, among other atrocities. In this country of give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the U.S. tradition has been to welcome the many. In fact, except for American Indians, we all have ancestors who traveled to this land of the free. So why is there such a rise of hatred and fear? Do we as Americans really believe in freedom of religion for all? And what can we do to address this wave of anger and fear across our land? It is with all of this in mind that we discuss today these difficult issues with Rabbi Dina Feingold of the Beth Hillel Temple of Kenosha and Nabi Alamin of the Racine Islamic Center. Welcome to both of you, and thanks so much for joining us
today.
Thank
you for having me.
Absolutely.
I'd like to begin with you, Rabbi Feingold. Could I just start by asking you what differences you might see between now and, say, a year ago or 10 years ago? Do you personally see more incidents? And also, is there a difference in climate in this country for those who are Jewish?
In terms of here in the Kenosha community, I don't see an uptick in anti-Semitism. I don't see a difference in terms of incidents that happen at the synagogue. There have been incidents over the years of anti-Semitism, but I can't honestly say that there has been an uptick in recent years. One thing that I do notice that's different is the number of times we are receiving alerts from national Jewish agencies telling us to check on our security procedures, make sure we're up to date, to contact our local police department because there have been threats or because there have been actual incidents. And we get these kind of warnings even when incidents happen abroad. Mm-hmm. Because it's, you know, in this age of the internet and, across the world communications, even though something might happen abroad, it could be centered in the United States or vice versa. So we get these warnings, and they've been coming more and more often. And, our response is always to call the local police department and ask them to, be aware of possible threats to our congregation, mm-hmm. step up their surveillance around our building and so on. And I have to say we've had a wonderful cooperation
That's
from the
great.
Kenosha Police Department in that regard.
And how does it affect your people? Are people more anxious? Are they sometimes afraid to come to synagogue?
I think people are more anxious. We had a discussion about this in more than one context in our community recently. And people do seem to, they're just sort of their antennae are up. One member noted that they saw a police car with the lights flashing in front of our building when they drove up for services, and it turned out to be something totally unrelated mm-hmm. to us. But, that gave her sort of her heart skipped a beat when she saw that and wondered, should we go to services? What's going on? Should we go home? We have had discussions at our various leadership groups within the synagogue. Should we have extra security around our building for our big events? And I think it's just the climate around us, not necessarily anything that's happened here, that is making people more fearful.
Yes. And in general, I think we're a little more fearful with a lot of things that are happening recently as a nation. I'd like to ask you, Nabeed, to describe maybe the difference of you've seen in both incidents of hatred and also anti-Muslim climate in your community, our community, and our nation.
Okay, if I might start with saying that since 9/11, the propaganda and the justification for having bad feelings about Muslims has increased to this current time. However, these are really strange times that we're living in, and people are doing crazy things, and it's shown around the world almost instantly. And it forces people to be more apprehensive. Mm-hmm. It forces people to be more reclusive and fearful of others. It has nothing to do with any of the religions.
And, you know, I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, the terrorism, the impact on Muslims due to 9/11 and subsequent actions, even there's a new, relatively new word, I think, Islamophobia. But what are the misconceptions people have about your religion that might lead to that?
That it's different than the other two. that we have that is different than the other two, but the reality is that there ain't but one God, and we all have the same God, and we're all practicing those qualities that we understand to be God-like. We're all practicing those. We're just calling them by different names.
And do you think there's a misconception that your religion is a violent one?
Well, absolutely, because that's what the media promotes. And most people are guided. Most people in America are guided by what they see the media's interpretation of how things are, which is, I hope that we really realize that that's not true.
Mm-hmm. You haven't had specific threats to your...
No, we're likened unto Rabbi Feingold
in
Racine. Mm-hmm. And we're African-American Muslim converts or reverts, we like to say. Mm-hmm. So it's a different experience. And we're not as threatening as someone from the Middle East to people in general. And we've gotten excellent cooperation from the police department, and we've upped up our security, but we're still open and inviting people to come and join us for prayer and see what we're all about, listen to our story. You know, we take opportunities like this to say that we like to think that people love us for the same reason they love Jesus, because we love them first.
Dina, okay. There's been, you know, it's troubling that there's been such a history of anti-Semitic persecution throughout history, and what do you attribute that to? Do you think most people in the United States are accepting of religious diversity, or do you think the fact that we're such a Christian plurality here overtakes our kind of democratic ideals of acceptance of all religions.
Well, with respect to the history of anti-Semitism, I would echo something that Nabi said, which is that, you know, we're perceived as different. And we've always been a small minority wherever we've lived, almost throughout all of history. We've been a small minority in a country that's dominated by some other religion. Not, you know, in various parts of history, it's been different religions that were dominant. And we were the outsider, that, you know, outsider group that was different, that might be viewed as foreign, as having different customs and traditions, and, you know, probably until the modern era, viewed as keeping to ourselves and not mixing in much with the other cultures. And, you know, plus we were really denied the opportunity to mix in with other cultures. And so that creates all kinds of misconceptions and stereotypes. Uh-huh. And, you know, so I think most hatred is born out of ignorance. Uh-huh. And I think that's been true throughout our history, is that people don't understand us. They don't know what we're really about. They don't, as Nabi was saying, they don't realize that we're just another religion that believes in one God. And we have really a tremendous amount in common with Christianity and Islam, not to mention other religions of the world. We all have very similar values and goals and mm-hmm. and hopes and dreams, and just have different ways of getting there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's a large part of why mm-hmm. anti-Semitism exists and continues mm-hmm. to exist. I do have to say that there are pieces in the New Testament that are, you know, the New Testament, unfortunately, is anti-Jewish in some of its mm-hmm. sections. And that, unfortunately, is part of the Easter story. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that is without proper interpretation, that message that, you know, the Jews are somehow responsible for the death of Jesus and, mm-hmm. and so on has definitely, you know, fueled the fire of anti-Semitism throughout different periods of history. Go ahead.
Well, it's just so unfortunate because the religions, I'm in a minority religion, sort of. I'm Unitarian Universalist, and what we do is we're not Christian. We study all the best of all the world religions. And you know, when you do that, there's so much commonality between the religions. What we believe in, the love that, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, is in virtually every religion in different words. And so it's it is unfortunate when religions are singled out for, you're right, it's based on ignorance. It's based on not knowing the fact that what unites us is our spirituality, I think. And mm-hmm. that was well said. This chant that was used during the presidential campaign, do you think that that has had this chant of America first, and the crowd screaming America first? Do you believe that that's been recent rhetoric, I guess, stirs up fear in our country? Any of you answer. Well,
first of all, you said this chant that was used for the president's mm-hmm. Ceremony. Okay, I'm not familiar with the chant.
Well, no, just when in the political campaign.
I think the first time it was said real clearly was at the inauguration speech.
That's
when I was first aware of America first, America first. Mm-hmm. That sentiment may have been expressed by the president and when he was campaigning, but I think he first said it very clearly in his inauguration mm-hmm. remarks.
Sorry. Has there been rhetoric that you feel, you know, has furthered sort of this fear of things we don't understand? Do you think it's attributable to some of the campaigning or the current administration?
You're asking either of us?
Either of you for any of these questions.
Well, I think President Trump made it really clear when he was running for office that he wanted to keep Muslims out of this country. I don't think anyone would deny that.
Mm-hmm.
He said it. He said it repeatedly. Mm-hmm. He wanted a Muslim ban. I think that has caused real fear in the hearts of anyone in the immigrant community. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, he made it very clear that he wants to, you know, send Mexicans home and build a wall between here and Mexico. I think the language of the Trump campaign was very divisive, very anti-immigrant, And even without the words America First, it's, you know, that whole metaphor. He wants to make it reality, but the whole metaphor of building a wall is about dividing people, right? Keeping people out, keeping certain people out, letting certain people stay in. And I think that's been a trope that has really emboldened people who want to separate groups and say, this is, we're better, you don't belong here, whatever you want to, however you want to define it. And I think on the other side, it's increased fear among those who are here or who wanted to come here.
Yes, absolutely. Well, he criticized Obama, in fact, for saying, for never saying Islamic terrorists. And yet the emphasis in Islamic terrorists is that if you're Islam, you're a terrorist.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, on that, I can piggyback, so to speak.
Yes.
This has been a very strategic effort to divide and to conquer. And I guess for me, when I President-elect Trump was announced as president, I simply said to myself that God's still in charge. We have to go through a lot of these things that we're going through in order to better understand ourselves. We're very challenged people. We're very fortunate, and we have an opportunity here to make some, to rectify some wrongs, you know. And I'm sure that this term is going to give us an opportunity to really come to the forefront with that. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully I can find a positive contribution to make myself. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we all can.
And, you know, that's another, a whole nother realm of things to talk about is, but what are some positive steps that you take in light of this culture of fear? Either of you, what kinds of things have your churches done?
In all things, you got to tell to your understanding of it what perceives to be the truth and share that. And if you can help eliminate the ignorance, the misinformation, then that'll help.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to find a way to be a part of that. Okay. Hate begets hate. You get what you put into the universe. It's going to come back to you. And he's going to, everyone that puts negative stuff out there, it's going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so God's still in charge.
You know, I would agree that getting out there and being out there in an interfaith type setting and sharing our stories is the most important thing that we can do. And our congregation has been very involved in this kind of thing all along. I mean, it isn't new for us. Even well before 9/11, we had a Jewish-Muslim dialogue group going between our synagogue and some area Muslims. Our congregation has been involved in interfaith work ever since its beginning, 90 years ago. But in terms of the current climate and the current situation, we held a rally on the front steps of our synagogue after the first travel ban was attempted to be implemented, and it was actually one of a series of nationwide rallies that were sponsored by a refugee society, HIAS. But rather than just having it be our synagogue doing it, we invited the interfaith community to be part of it, and it had, you know, speakers from the interfaith community address the crowd assembled, and, you know, people standing out there with their posters in the freezing cold, saying, you know, what we did was, this was actually a project of the Religious Leaders Caucus of Cush, but we hosted it at the front steps of the synagogue, was we had everybody talk about that we are immigrants. We are all descendants of immigrants and where our ancestors came from. And that was how we introduced ourselves, rather than I'm the pastor of this church and I'm the rabbi of this synagogue. I am so-and-so, and I'm a third-generation Jewish American, and my ancestors came from Austria-Hungary and Russia, in my case, you know, and then everybody had their own story. So I think it's really important to come to people, together with people. There was a wonderful event at the mosque in Kenosha on Sunday night, an interfaith event where everybody spoke on the same themes of unity and solidarity and acceptance. I think these things are extremely important, and more people who attend these things and learn about other cultures, the more understanding there's going to be in the world, and especially here in America.
Absolutely. And you do lunch and learns, events like that also, right?
Yeah, that those are really just within our congregation. Okay. It was just an educational program within our congregation, but we try to bring up issues that are current.
And I want to ask you, too, about one more thing. You know, it must be very difficult to talk to children about the reality of hate crimes, but still, while still keeping them, I guess, comfortable in embracing their faith. You have a Kenosha youth group, right?
Yes.
And what kinds of things do they do? And do you find this with children, that they're, like, you know, a little afraid or confused?
Yes, I think, you know, a lot of our kids experience insensitive, ignorant comments said to them. Sometimes that it's on a religious basis. You know, why don't you believe in God? They don't, you know, their parents apparently teach them that Jews don't believe in God, or maybe that if you're not a Christian, you don't believe in God. I'm not sure exactly what's taught to them, but then our kids get asked this question. You know, even I've had kids had, you know, anti-Semitic things said to them. One girl in a discussion, a teenager, told me that she was on Valentine's Day given a Valentine by someone she thought was her friend, that her friend thought was a joke, that she put something in it about, she put a swastika in there and something about Hitler. And the friend thought that was funny. You know, so there's so much that, you know, kids are subject to that, again, it's out of ignorance, it's out of them latching on to something that they don't really understand. And so we do talk about it with our kids and try to give them tools for responding. You know, when is a time to just ignore and walk away, and when is the time to engage and have a teachable moment, and when is a time to take it to an adult or a person in charge and deal with it in an institutional way. These are things that we have to teach our kids, because they're always, it comes up again and again. I'm not saying that our kids constantly are bombarded with this, but it's an experience that Jewish kids have from time to time in their lives, and they need to know how to respond.
It's interesting. I went to the poverty law site. I'm not saying the name right.
And Southern Poverty Law Center.
Southern Poverty Law Center, and also the Anti-Defamation League. And the hate crimes are up nationwide. But some of them that they list, it's really enlightening to and sad to read the things that are happening. But you mentioned the menorah, but a little girl at Christmas was asking her dad, with all the Christian symbols up, why couldn't they light up a menorah? And he built this menorah lit in their backyard. And it was not only, it was bent into the shape of a, in a hate crime, it was bent in the shape of a swastika.
Oh, wow.
And with some really, of course, nasty words. And there's just a whole series of things that have happened, and it's very sad.
But why do people why do people hate other people? Generally, because they self, generally they feel inadequate within themselves, and they're you down others so that you can feel good.
Right.
This is not working. This is not a program that's gonna. That's why we have so much chaos and confusion. That's why the nation is divided. Because there are those that are attempting to do that.
And they tend to join with other people like them. That's
absolutely
how you get skinhead groups.
Well, but again, as the rabbi had mentioned, finding teachable moments. And every day we should have an opportunity to find a teachable moment to dispel some of the myths. You know, and the mistruths.
Absolutely.
Is that a conversation that you have to have with your young people, too?
Well, ongoing. Absolutely, all the time. because the media bombards them with all of these, all of this, I should say me. I call CNN continuous negative news. I'm just, because people become a product of the environment in which they are mm-hmm. saturated.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They can't escape that.
Mm-hmm.
So teachable moments, you know, I'm going to take away from this
right.
conversation as something that I'm going to be more mindful of.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we all remember one of the worst hate crimes against a religious minority that occurred right around here in 2012 at the massacre at the Oak Creek Sikh Temple by a neo-Nazi group. It was so shocking, and particularly in light of the extreme pacifism of the Sikh people. They are extremely peace-loving people. And how much are people afraid of people just because they dress differently or speak differently or worship differently or even love differently? We say in the Unitarian Church, we say, you know, standing on the side of love, whatever that is. But do you think that people just are afraid of anything that's different?
They're apprehensive for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't see that for themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know. And we have the innate ability to justify anything that we do. We can justify mm-hmm. it, whether that's right or wrong.
Okay.
And we're living in a time where anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
And got television programs called Snap, where people just all of a sudden they just lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to take these teachable moments and help people reel them back in. Like, hey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're talking in a way, we ask the children, would you talk that way in church? Would you talk that way if your grandmother were here? And generally, they're going to say no.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we have to reel them back in to get in touch with their real self. Because if you're in touch with yourself, you're in touch with God.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You can't be in touch with God and not be in touch with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk all this stuff, but the manifestation of what you are will show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I haven't said a lot about Hispanics in all of this because we're looking at becoming a sanctuary church, and of course we know that they've spoken at the government, at the national level, about no more sanctuary cities or churches or sanctuary states, which I think California is a sanctuary state. So we're going to be doing a whole show on that, but certainly the Hispanic groups have faced great discrimination in recent times.
And I think the fear in the Hispanic community is really palpable.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. In fact, we had a meeting about the sanctuary thing, and a girl got up from one of our high schools, and she said, you know, I'm illegal, and I'm going to start saying I'm illegal. But, you know, it's very dangerous, and families torn apart, and there are businesses that say, we don't know what's going to happen to us if they actually send all these Hispanic people back. It's a huge problem. I wondered for each of you, how do you think fundamentalism affects the religions, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, and how does it affect radicalism? Because we certainly see a strong Christian right. We see Muslim far right. We see probably Jewish the same thing. How does that affect this growing sense of division? Or do you think it's not that much impactful?
Again, people find justification for doing whatever it is they do. It's how many people are there on the earth? A billion? 2 billion? It's 1 billion Muslims and it's going to increase. It's going to get worse. Unless there's a thing that we call, it says, through the token of time, man is virtually lost, except for such as joined together for the mutual teaching of truth. Exalt one another in deeds of righteousness, and trust in God until we go back to really embracing that. And those are African traditions. Mm-hmm. They're not Christian, Jewish, because all of them came out of Africa, Christian, Jews, Muslim, all of it. You know, so if you go back to the original, and we were love for our brothers and our sisters, those good things we love for ourselves, if we would embrace those things sincerely, then we could see a change. But when good people sit back and do nothing, evil flourishes. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're at, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. You know, I agree that you can take a religious text and make it support almost anything you want,
yes.
want it to. I've been reading a book by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who's the former chief rabbi of Great Britain, and the book is called Not in My Name. And so many things are, so many terrible acts are committed in God's name, but that's, you know, not what the religion really teaches people to do. Also, many wonderful acts are committed and are performed, I should say, in God's name. And I think it's important to focus on that as well. Mm-hmm. You know, there are plenty of secular, non-religious haters out there. Mm-hmm. You know, the head of the parent head of the current white supremacist sort of intellectual white supremacist group in America, Richard Spencer, he's not coming from a religious standpoint. He's mm-hmm. coming from a, you know, what he would call a cultural, you know, the culture of whiteness, European whiteness is what mm-hmm. informs his hatred of other people. So, I mean, I think we tend to blame religion and, I think religion gets a bad rap mm-hmm. most of the time, and we forget all of the wonderful things that are done in the name of religion.
Yes, yes. There's always that balance of, mm-hmm. And you look at how groups like the KKK did embrace religion and Christianity in their horrific acts. So it, but more is done in the name of good by religious groups, I think, than others. How can I go back to the security thing for just a minute, especially mm-hmm. probably with you, Dina, because I think there's more possibility mm-hmm. of threat there. But have you changed how you lock your buildings or when people are let in or what kind of security
well,
measures have you taken?
For a long time, we've had very careful security procedures. And one of the things that has been interesting over these last months when all of these Jewish community centers were threatened, and, of course, we found out surprisingly last week that it seems like most of these threats came from one young Israeli Jewish American in Israel. I don't think it was a surprise that it was just one or two. You know, the thought was it might be just one group or one person behind all of these things. But the surprise was that he happened to be a Jewish teenager living mm-hmm. in Israel. But one of the things we discovered during this period where there was so many threats was that we, unfortunately, have learned how to get really good at security.
Mm-hmm.
And all of our institutions have our procedures in place. And we didn't have to step up, really, our procedures, unfortunately, because uh-huh. we've gotten a lot of practice over the years and have put safe procedures in place, and we're very careful.
And has that affected your specific Muslim?
Again, security has always been a top priority mm-hmm. because people have to feel safe. Yes, it's increased, being in the sense of being more, even more diligent and being more observant, you know. And it's hard to have freedom and do whatever you want. It's really hard. You know, we're not frisking people at the door anymore. Okay, but at one time it was.
You did, huh?
However, I see them that they don't see watching them. Okay, I say it like that. You know, but everyone is invited, and we welcome people to come in.
That's great. Can you tell me just what do you think, how optimistic, I guess, or pessimistic are you about the future? Is there a time that this hatred and fear will end, or do you think that it's just an ongoing thing? Is there, how optimistic or pessimistic are either of you about the future?
Well, I think these things come and go in waves, and I do think that we're at a point that, I mean, it's been documented that hate groups are on the rise and that incidents are on the rise over the, not just since the election, but over the last couple of years in the United States and also abroad with some of these terrible incidents that have happened in Europe and other places. I think hatred will always be with us. I think, you know, ignorance and lashing out against minority groups, usually based on ignorance, will always be with us to one extent or another. But I think there's a tremendous amount we can do, and especially in our own communities. I mean, that's the place where you have to start,
right,
is build understanding through dialogue and education and intergroup discussion. If you can build a sense of understanding and therefore a sense of security within your own community, I think it can build out from there. There's some things over which you have no control, but that's one thing that you can have some impact on in the local area.
And I'm probably not the best person to ask that question to, because I'm probably one of the most optimistic people I know.
I can tell that.
And, you know, and this season that we're in is just a season. We don't know how long it's going to last, but it's going to pass, and that we know. You know, and we have to go through these things in order to grow to be better things, to have a better America. We're going to have to go through the challenges that we're confronted with, and we're going to have to successfully deal with it. So I'm very optimistic that we're going to be successful.
And there are already so many good things happening. A little fear I have is before Nazi Germany came.
Apprehension.
A little apprehension, because before Nazi Germany came to power, there was this huge wave of nationalism and you know, that someone was quoted as saying, I would like this country to be completely white, completely, you know, homogenous.
Right.
And we're a little bit in that time. How do we address that?
I don't know. You let time address it, because it becomes self-evident that they're fighting a losing battle.
Because we're all people.
Are you asking how do you fight the apprehension, or how do you
how do you fight the I think either, but the tendency toward nationalism, where you want everybody to be the same.
Mm. Well, I do think that those are things that come and go in waves, and you know, again, I guess my answer would be the same, that in our own smaller, you know, community groups, local groups, we have to, you know, have people come together so they can understand the richness that variety brings to our communities, and that the heterogeneous society is a much more interesting and rich society than one that's homogeneous. I don't think that we're in a period that's like the rise of the ramp up to Nazi Germany. I mean, yes, I think there's some people that have some nationalist tendencies, and there seems to be a megaphone for that right now. But you have to remember that in Nazi Germany, you know, every single institution in the country was on board with Nazism. The courts, the police, you know, every institution that could have fought against Nazism
was controlled.
Threw its lot in with Nazism and worked together. And that we are not seeing here. We are seeing the checks and balances. We have checks and balances. We're seeing them work. We're seeing, you know, people questioning what's being said and statements that are being made. And And that's the beauty of our American democracy, and we have to hope and you know believe that it'll defeat the voices that are creating division and hatred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hitler, for instance, won the election by 90-some%, 97%, and we're nowhere near. I mean, I think another thing that actually really does help a lot is the fact that we see so much diversity on TV and in movies and in plays and in everything. I think in our daily lives, we're much less separated and segregated, I think, than we ever were. This time went really fast, and I just wonder if each of you might like to end with something that you would like the public to know about your religion and about what you believe.
For me, personally, Islam has been a salvation for me. I was born Southern Baptist, okay, and then I did a study on all the major religions when I was much younger, and Islam chose me, and I trust that I'll be a dutiful servant of this way of life. It's not a religion; it's a way of life, and it's not for everybody, but everybody should find whatever floats your boat. Mm-hmm. And this is what I found to float my boat, Islam.
Absolutely, and that's a real, and that's a real statement to understanding of the good that is in all religions.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, find what works for you and trug on.
That's right.
And I just like to invite anyone who's listening to come in and experience a Jewish worship service, to come to an event that we're having at the synagogue. Anything that piques their interest that we put out there for the public, or if you go on our website and see what we're all about at BethHillel.net. We welcome guests. We welcome spiritual seekers who are looking for a spiritual home. I'll be teaching a class in May called Taste of Judaism, which is for anyone out there in the public who just is curious. In fact, it's called A Taste of Judaism, Are You Curious? We're not out there seeking people to become Jewish, although we welcome people who choose that for themselves. But we, we just, in this spirit that we've been talking about today of dispelling ignorance and having more communication and understanding between groups, I'd just like to put it out there that we are a very open synagogue and community at Beth Hillel Temple in Kenosha, and we would love to share our traditions and beliefs and customs with anyone who's interested.
To both of you, that's such a wonderful closing, both of your statements, to the importance of understanding and knowing that we're all out there just seeking the light and doing the best we can, and we should find places where we are nourished. And so that's just great. Thank you so much. The following quote I wanted to end with is from the Anti-Defamation League website. When Chicago attorney Sigmund Livingston founded the Anti-Defamation League in 1913, he envisioned an America where those who seemed different were not targets of discrimination and threats, but were equals, worthy of shared opportunity and a place in the American dream. This vision remains relevant today, its call to action just as urgent. I would like to thank my guest today, Rabbi Dina Feingold of the Beth Hillel Temple, and Nabi Al-Amin of the Muslim Center of Racine, for the work that you're doing to promote justice and understanding and to make a place for all religions, all cultures, and all people in our society. You're making a huge difference in the lives of many through your important work. For that and for being with us today, we thank you. And finally, thanks to you, our listeners, for sharing with us your time this Saturday morning. I'm Linda Fleshensky, and I hope that you will join us here at WGTD every Saturday morning for this program as we explore the important subjects that touch our communities, because as we all know so well, community matters. Take care.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support comes from Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues, Huge Groove, Natty Nation, Terry James and the Blue Flames, and more, performing at Kenosha's Lakefront on Saturday, August 19th. Tickets at Andrea's, Tenuta's Deli, the Kenosha County Foundation Office, or at MahoneFund.org.
Support for WGTD comes from Andrea's. Visit Andrea's.